Hello, my name's Peter Edwards, and this is the first in a series of three talks under the title of Coming Home. Talks that were given interactively with a group at the Methodist Church in Clifton at the end of August 2012. In these three talks, we're going to be thinking about how, as Christians, we come home to God. In the first talk, we'll think about coming home to God in a very personal, spiritual sense. In the second talk, we'll focus upon the church coming home to God. And in the third and final talk, we'll be thinking about coming to our eternal home with God. The talks are based on a book by Michael Mitten, an Anglican priest, entitled Dreaming of Home. So let's come now to our first talk. Let me begin with a quotation from the book by a man called Roland Evans. He says this: "The deepest dream of human longing is to belong, to find a place of unconditional acceptance where we can be at home. We will recognize that place, for it is where God stands for each of us." And a Roman Catholic sister called Stanislaw Kennedy writes this: "Home is the place where we discover who we are, where we are coming from, and where we are going to. It is where we are helped to establish our own identity." So we can begin to see that when we think about coming home and coming home to God in particular, we're thinking more than about a roof over our heads and four walls around us. We're thinking more of home as a place of belonging, an environment in which we discover who we are in what is often a bewildering world. Many of us, when we start to think about home, will of course think about the place that is home for us now at this stage in our lives. But others of us may think back at some point to our childhood homes. Frederick Buchner, in his book The Longing for Home, writes this: "To think about home eventually leads you to think back to your childhood home, the place where your life started, the place which, off and on throughout your life, you keep going back to, if only in dreams and memories, and which is apt to determine the kind of place, perhaps a place inside of yourself, that you spend the rest of your life searching for, even if you are not aware that you are searching." For myself, when I look back to my childhood, I think back to my own childhood home near Chesterfield as a place of happiness, contentment, safety, and security. But I also feel very longingly for a place where, as a child, I used to stay with my parents and sister when we went on holiday down to South Devon in the 1950s. It was a guest house that was run by some friends of my parents in Exmouth. And my memories of that place are still very strong and vivid. And over the years, I've always had a longing to want to go back there. I did so when I was about 18 or 19 years of age and found the place where I had spent so many happy childhood holidays. But even now within me, there is still that kind of longing to go back to that place, to search for something that I had there as a child, something that made me feel I really belonged, something that was good and positive and warm, and made me want to revisit it again. But of course, not everyone's memories of childhood homes are always so affirming and comforting. Buchner is probably referring to an ideal home in that description that he gives to us. Michael Mitten speaks about the ideal home in these words. There is within us a homing instinct for something more than a house or a land where we have lived or live now. It is a longing for, a hankering after this ideal home, this place of utter safety and belonging, where more than anything else we can be ourselves without fear or shame. This is a longing that we do well to attend to, and it is my experience that by attending to it, I have discovered something about living more fully in the life that has been entrusted to me. We all have parts of us that are too sheltered, that are afraid to come out for one reason or another. If bits of us are hiding away like this, it is a clue that we are not yet entirely at home in ourselves. There are forces that prevent us from fully being ourselves. And Michael Mitten concludes by saying this: home is where the heart is. It stands for the sure centre where individual life is shaped and from where it journeys forth. What it ultimately intends is that each of its individuals would develop the capacity to be at home in themselves. This is something that is usually overlooked, but is a vital requirement in the creativity and integrity of individual personality. When one is at home in oneself, one is integrated and enjoys the sense of balance and poise. In a sense, that is exactly what spirituality is, the art of homecoming. Homecoming is, in many respects, another name for spirituality. So coming home to God, then, is, in Mitten's view, about our own spirituality, our own life of prayer, our own relationship of the spirit with God. Eli Weissel, one of the best known survivors of the Holocaust, a Romanian-born Jewish writer, has said this: when you die and go to heaven and you meet God, God is not going to say to you, why didn't you become a saint? Why didn't you discover the cure for cancer? Why didn't you change the world? No, all God will ask you at that holy time is, why didn't you become you? Why didn't you become you? So, what God, according to Weissel, is most interested in is whether or not we have become the person God designed us to be. Isn't that what spirituality is really all about? Finding our true selves before God. It's when we feel restless within ourselves, or that we don't feel we quite belong where we are within our own skin, that we often think about the need to journey home, to come back to God. Fiona Gardner, in her book Journeying Home, alludes to this feeling. She writes, journeying home starts with a glimpse of recognition that something needs to change. We are interrupted by a thought, is this it? Is this how it's always going to be? I don't want to spend the rest of my life like this. There has to be something more. We wake to the realization that something needs to happen. Journeying home is awakening, a way of happening, and a relationship with ourselves and with God. Jesus, I think, expressed and demonstrated this truth in one of the most famous stories or parables that he ever told. It's the one that we tend to call the parable of the prodigal son. You'll find it in Luke's Gospel, chapter 15, starting at verse 11. Let me read it to you. Then Jesus said, "There was a man who had two sons. The younger of them said to his father, 'Father, give me the share of the property that will belong to me.' So he divided his property between them. A few days later, the younger son gathered all he had and travelled to a distant country, and there he squandered his property in dissolute living. When he had spent everything, a severe famine took place throughout that country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country, who sent him to his fields to feed the pigs. He would gladly have filled himself with the pods that the pigs were eating, and no one gave him anything. But when he came to himself, he said, 'How many of my father's hired hands have bread enough and to spare? But here I am, dying of hunger. I will get up and go to my father, and I will say to him, "Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me like one of your hired hands."' So he set off and went to his father. But while he was still far off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion. He ran and put his arms around him and kissed him. Then the son said to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to his slaves, 'Quickly, bring out a robe, the best one, and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. And get the fatted calf and kill it, and let us eat and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.' And they began to celebrate." Kenneth Bailey, writing on this parable of the prodigal son, demonstrates the very careful way in which the story has been crafted and put together. It's rather like a parabola. It starts at one point, it dips down, only then to return back to where it started from. He describes it like this in six steps. First, a son is lost. Second, goods wasted in extravagant living. Third, everything is lost. Four, the great sin, feeding pigs for Gentiles. Five, total rejection. And finally, a change of mind. That sixth and final step in the story comes in verse 17, where Luke tells us simply that the young man came to himself, or, as some translations put it, he came to his senses. From that point, we begin, as it were, the journey back. This is the farthest point that the son has travelled away from his father. But now that he has come to his senses, he begins the return journey, going back home to his father. So, after a change of mind, there is now an initial repentance. "Make me a servant, and I will pay it back." Then, the next step is total acceptance. His father ran and kissed him. The next step is the great repentance. "I am no longer worthy to be called your son." The next step, everything is gained, a robe, ring and shoes. Secondly, goods are used in joyful celebration. And finally, a son is found, completing the return to where the son began in the first place. David Adam provides what is probably the shortest summary ever heard of this parable. He puts it like this: at home, sick of home, away from home, homesick, home. At the heart of this story, home is seen as a place of law rather than grace. A place where you have to earn everything or fulfill your duty. The younger son leaves for this reason, and the older son stays behind because that's what home should be. a place where you do your duty and get what you deserve. But at the end of the story, the younger son discovers that he was wrong in his view of home. It isn't a place of law, but of grace. It's not a place where you get what you deserve, but rather the opposite. You get what you don't deserve. You receive more than you could possibly expect or imagine from the Father. I think it's clear that Jesus means us to understand the parable of the prodigal son in terms of our own experience of turning away from God, of rejecting him, of seeking to be disobedient or rebellious, of wanting to be independent and do our own thing, and then in the process rejecting all that's good that God offers to us. Sometimes in order to find our true selves before God, there is a sense in moving away from God, of having to leave him to discover that what we had before with God was much better than what we realized. That was so true of the younger son. He misunderstood, he misread what his father was offering him in his home. He thought it was a place of duty, where you only got what you deserved. He hadn't realized how much the Father had to lavish upon him. And I think the same is true in our own understanding of God. We often see God in terms of one who we receive things from, but only as we deserve it. Sometimes we think that God might withhold things from us because of what we've done in the past in our lives, because we've turned away from him, because we've done wrong things or bad things. We have to, like the younger son, come to a re-evaluation of our understanding of the Father and see that he isn't like that at all. But it's we who have projected onto God that kind of image of what he is like. Jesus makes it very plain in the parable that the Father is all loving, all gracious, all welcoming, all embracing, and simply longs for us to come to our senses, to turn around, and to make that return journey back home to him, and in the process to discover what we had failed to understand and notice before in our relationship with God. André Nouwen, in his great work on this parable, The Return of the Prodigal, writes this: "Leaving home is then much more than an historical event bound to time and place. It is a denial of the spiritual reality that I belong to God with every part of my being, that God holds me safe in an eternal embrace, that I am indeed carved in the palms of God's hands and hidden in their shadows. Leaving home means ignoring the truth that God has fashioned me in secret, moulded me in the depths of the earth, and knitted me together in my mother's womb. Leaving home is living as though I do not yet have a home and must look far and wide to find one." If all of this speaks to you, if you can detect in your own life and experience a sense of moving away from God in order to try and find your true self and identity, in order to discover where you belong, in order to try and find a home for yourself, then maybe you need to learn from the parable to discover that it is only when we turn back, when we make that return journey to God, when we come home to God, that we actually begin to discover our true selves, who we really are, and that with God we really and truly do belong, because with him we are at home, and as we all say, there's no place like home.